Here is a brand new story and a true story. Not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. But it wasn't the night before Christmas. It was the morning, a couple of days before the night before Christmas, when I woke up worried. Worried because I had been awakened by the sound of the alarm clock, and that was not normal. What was normal was to be awakened by my cat Banjo bopping on my cheek, telling me it was time for breakfast. And if I didn't pay attention, he got more aggressive until I would get up and feed him some kibble. But not this morning. There was no sign of Banjo. And his brother, Jean-Claude, also a big white and ginger big cat, was just laying on the bed as he always does. But where was Banjo? I threw on my bathrobe and I went down the stairs, worried, my mind racing with possibilities. What if I had locked him in the basement overnight by accident? A bad thing because there's no litter box in the basement. Or worse, what if he had sneaked out onto the screened porch? It was so cold last night, the start of this recent cold snap. It was minus 20 here in the Twin Cities. Oh. So I was so pleased to find him sitting in the living room. Just sitting, stock still, staring at the Christmas tree. I've never known Banjo to think anything was more important than breakfast, so this was strange. I made myself a cup of coffee, and I sat, and I watched Banjo watching the tree. And I developed a theory about his strange behavior. You see, the day before, I had found the body of a mouse, a dead mouse under the Christmas tree, and I was pretty sure that Banjo, who's a bigger hunter than his brother Jean-Claude, had left it there for us. I removed it, and now I thought he was back, wondering where his trophy mouse had gone, and hoping I would return it. But he stared so intently. His focus never wavered, and I began to wonder if actually there was a live mouse somewhere in the vicinity. I got down on my hands and knees, and I looked behind. I thought, between the tree and the wall, that's the most likely spot, and I looked back there. I couldn't see a mouse. His gaze seemed to be focused on the lower branches of the tree, so I parted the branches and moved the ornaments. I looked all in there. I couldn't find a mouse. Maybe it's hiding under the tree skirt. I padded all along the velvet tree skirt. Nothing came scurrying out. And while I was down there on the floor and flapping the fabric, Banjo never twitched a muscle. Then his brother, Jean-Claude, came down the stairs, looked at the Christmas tree, sat down, and began to stare. Oh, this was just too strange. My cats were hallucinating, or they had a very active imagination. I don't know. Then my wife, Christine, came downstairs, and I said, "These cats, they're losing their minds. There's no mouse there, and yet look how they're behaving." She walked right over to the Christmas tree, looked, and said, "I see a mouse." I jumped up, and I looked, and sure enough, there was a mouse. It was about 6 feet up the tree, back in by the trunk, sitting on a branch. And at the same moment, Christine and I said, "Oh, it's so cute." It was little, it was gray fur about the color of my shirt, and had a white belly and perky ears and a long pointy snout and big, big black eyes. And yes, it did look frightened, and it was holding just as still as the cats. Just as still as the cats. And in the next breath, Christine and I said together, "What are we going to do? I mean, we knew we shouldn't have a mouse in the house. We'd both lived in old houses for many years, and we know in the cold weather mice come in through the cracks, and I myself had live-trapped dozens of mice and transported them off to the woods or to a farmer's field. But there was more than a foot of snow outside right now, and it was so cold. Live-trapping it and letting it outside would not be a kindness. But I didn't think I could balance a trap. I didn't think I could balance a trap on the branches anyway. And could I reach in and capture it myself somehow? No, in my mind, I pictured the mouse leaping away and the cat leaping after it and ornaments going crashing and the whole tree tumbling to the floor and everyone chasing, animals chasing each other around the house and the whole living room in shambles within minutes. Christine said, let's have another cup of coffee and think this through. And so we did. But first, I got my phone and I took a picture of that mouse. And I zoomed in and I cropped it and I posted it on social media. And immediately, people began commenting on my Facebook page. This is when I discovered that half of my friends think mice are just so sweet and adorable and I should find a way to catch it and keep it. And the other half think mice are filthy vermin who spread disease and dirt and will probably chew on the electrical wires and burn my house down. Really, this mixture of advice was not very helpful. It even paralyzed my decision-making more. And so we sat and we watched the cats watching the tree until it was time for us to go over to Christine's mom's. Her 98-year-old mom was expecting us to come and spend a couple of hours, and I was worried now that the cats might try to get into the tree and climb it while we were gone. Now, we've had these cats for several years. Every Christmas, we go to a tree farm and get a fresh tree. They'd never tried to climb the tree, but there's a first time for everything. And this was the first time there'd been prey in the tree. Then I had an idea. I had made my cats little catnip toys. Little catnip toys shaped like mice from an old wool skirt of mine. And I was going to give them to them on Christmas morning. I would give them an early Christmas present. So I lured the cats up to the farthest end of the second floor, and I gave them a bunch of these little catnip mice, and they were thrilled. They were rolling around and yowling and meowing, and they were in ecstasy. And Christine and I quickly put on our coats and headed out the door, but not before I leaned into the tree and said to that mouse, "This is your chance. Get away while you can." 3 hours later, I came back. The mouse was still there. And all these little toys were strewn around the base of the tree as a warning. Then a knock came on the door, and it was our friend Michael. Now, I have to tell you, we did not call a man to come over and deal with our mouse situation. We were expecting Michael. He lives up north in northern Minnesota, out in the woods with his wife, and he had come down to the cities for the day to do some holiday stuff, and he was going to spend the night at our house. This was all planned, so I invited him in, and I made him a cup of coffee, and I explained the mouse situation to him. And he said, "Oh, we get mice up there all the time. You gotta kill them. I mean, you don't want to, but you gotta kill them." I didn't want to kill the Christmas mouse. Oh, I really didn't want to. And so we sat and drank our coffee and looked at the tree and looked at the cats looking at the tree until Christine came home. And she said, "Is the mouse still in the tree?" And I said, "Yes, the mouse is still in the tree. What are we going to do?" And she leaned into the tree and said, "I don't see it, though." I said, "What?" Michael and I both got up, and sure enough, the mouse was no longer on that branch where it had been for several hours. We looked high. We looked low. We walked all around the tree. We couldn't see the mouse. I even got a flashlight, and I shone it in there, trying to see if the mouse was hidden in another corner of the tree, but no, no mouse. Had it really gotten away? I was very excited at the thought, but also a little sad. I mean, it never even said goodbye. If it was really gone, it had vanished as mysteriously as it had come. And the cats, well, the cats seemed less intense than they had been. But was that because the mouse had really left or because they were just mellowed out by all that catnip? We finally decided that, yes, the mouse really had left. And then I was faced with all my friends on Facebook who were messaging saying, "What happened to the mouse? Did you capture the mouse? Is the mouse gone? Is the mouse still there? What happened? Don't leave us hanging." So I had to make up an ending. The little mouse went back to its home in a burrow in the yard or its home in the walls, I don't know. But it gathered around all the little mice around its feet and it told them a story of its grand adventure in the home of the humans, how it was pursued by giant monsters, orange and white monsters, but it escaped narrowly with its life by climbing a tall, tall, tall tree. And then it waited patiently, patiently, until it had its opportunity to slip away stealthily, silently, and save its life and return home again a hero. And the moral of the story is, children, never, ever go into the home of the humans, for monsters lurk there. I thought that was a pretty good ending. But of course, one of my Facebook friends had to change it a bit. And she commented, "Or maybe those children are hearing that story and they are thrilled with the idea of adventure. They cannot wait until they are old enough themselves to set foot into that magic enchanted land of your living room." And you know, that sounds equally plausible. So mice, if you're in the ceiling, if you're in the walls, if you're listening under the floors, that tree, it's going away. Tomorrow is New Year's Day. We're going to take the ornaments off, box them up, put them in the attic, haul the tree out to the alley, and the city will come and compost it. There will be no refuge, no place to climb and hide. Do not come into this house, for you will surely die. And we want the Christmas mouse to live. We want all of you little mice to go on living. Just not here.